Hello and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutin.
Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. Malaysia's COVID-19 vaccination program for children aged between 5 to 12 will begin on February 3rd. 6 million children are expected to be vaccinated. That's some 20% of the Malaysian population. While some health experts are encouraging parents to get their children vaccinated as soon as possible, there are still some parents who are hesitant about giving the Pfizer mRNA vaccine to young children. They ask if it's necessary to subject their children to potential risks of adverse reactions or potential long-term effects. To address some of these concerns, we have joining us now Dr. Musa Nordin. He's a consultant pediatrician at KPJ Damansara Specialist Hospital. He's also a life member of the Malaysian Pediatric Association, which is a founding member of Immunize for Life, an expert-driven community education initiative aimed at promoting immunization to prevent vaccine-preventable diseases. Dr. Musa, as a pediatrician, I'm just wondering, what are some of the concerns that you're hearing from parents and how are you addressing those concerns?
Hi, good evening, Melissa and Sharad. In fact, on the contrary, many of the parents who visit me with their children are excited about the vaccines, and most of them would like to know when they can start getting the vaccines for their 5 to 11 year olds. And they are really looking forward to it and would like their pediatrician or their general practitioner who's been looking after their kids since they were born to be actually doing the immunization, because the trust has been built over several years, 5 to 12 years with these children. And when the doctor when I tell the parent, this is a vaccine that is going to protect your children against symptomatic COVID 91%, then most of them would want to have the vaccine. And very few are actually hesitant. Yes, Melissa.
Musa, what makes you so confident that a vaccine that was only, very recently developed doesn't have the kind of complications that one hears about, and or people assume, or they put it on WhatsApp groups and they circulate it? What makes you so confident that this is a good thing for children?
This is a science that has been incubating since 1990s. We've got about 30 years of experience with mRNA technology. And that's why when the Chinese informed the genomic sequence in early January, within a space of 2 months, Moderna had put together an mRNA vaccine. And they had showed that it was 95% effective against the COVID virus. And they also showed now, with about 8 billion doses, that the adverse effects appear fairly early, i.e. anaphylaxis within a space of half an hour. Or the more recent concern is myocarditis, and usually with the second dose at about 4 to 7 days. So we should know any adverse outcome within a space of at least 2 months. And that's why the news going around about long-term adverse effects following immunization, AEFR, is actually misinformation. If you look at vaccine technology, the CDC and the WHO says that you must have the trial for at least 2 months, because virtually all of the adverse effects, acute and chronic, would appear within that time space. And we've seen this unravel with the mRNA technology. Yes, Sharad.
Okay, that's wonderful. I'm really encouraged to hear that you are getting positive feedback from parents. That's really quite heartening. But I don't want to dismiss parents who may have questions, who may still be undecided or have some skepticism. And I'm hoping we can address that tonight, particularly with, as you said, the approved vaccine that's been given is the mRNA vaccine. And I'm just wondering if some parents, if you remember in the beginning of the pandemic, there were many people who were hesitant towards the mRNA vaccine. What does the data say about mRNA vaccines as opposed to, say, the data on other types of vaccines, say, deactivated virus?
Okay. With the inactivated vaccines, like the Chinese Sinovac, right? The adverse effects are less, but the vaccine efficacy is similarly less, 50%. But with the mRNA technology, the vaccines are very effective, 95%, right? And yes, there are adverse effects following the immunization. And as I mentioned, the world has rolled out about 8 billion vaccines. So we are now informed of the adverse effects following immunization. And I made mention of two major adverse effects. The other adverse effects are minor, all right? Not much difference between the placebo and the and those given the vaccine. Yes, you get the adverse effects locally in terms of pain, in terms of redness, in terms of swelling, yeah, or fatigue, right? You get malaise, you get high-grade fever. But in terms of severe adverse effects, there are really two we're talking about here. One is anaphylaxis within the first 30 minutes and myocarditis, which affects usually with the second dose after a space of about 4 to 7 days of the second dose. Yeah, Melissa.
So, Musa, are you saying that because of the nature of the adverse effects, that they can actually be remedied? Is that the import of what you're saying, that in the first half an hour doing observation, medical intervention can prevent that from having a fatal effect or, you know, anything kind of damaging for the long term?
Right. For the anaphylaxis, that's why the Ministry of Health make sure that you observe for the first half an hour. If there's no anaphylaxis, then even with the second dose, you're fine. But with myocarditis, and this is very reassuring for mothers who are getting their 5 to 11 years old immunized, yeah? The rates are extremely low. The Americans have rolled out 8 million doses of the Pfizer vaccine. And there were only 12 cases of myocarditis, and usually with the second dose. So this is less than, this is about 1 in a million. 1 in a million, if I may repeat. So, right. And all of these cases, all of these 12 cases, recovered fully, right? There were no adverse effects to their heart.
Dr. Musa, yes, how would you contrast that to, say, the impact of contracting COVID for children?
Interesting data from the CDC. If you are less than 20 years old and you get COVID, the risk of you getting a myocarditis is 450 per million. Remember I said only 1 per million with the vaccine? So, I mean, it is quite clear the risk-benefit is in favor of the vaccine. And we're not just talking about myocarditis. Your child, who is 5 to 11 years old, is the age group which is highest at risk for getting multi-systemic multi-system inflammatory syndrome in children, right? 1 in 3 of them between 5 to 11, right, is admitted to ICU for MISC. In Malaysia, over a period of 18 months, we've had about 174 cases, and 100 of them were less than 12 years old. That's 60%, and 7 died. I mean, You don't want your child to be inflicted with MISC, right? which basically is the most severe form of COVID, affecting your brain, encephalitis, your lungs, pneumonitis, your kidneys, your virtually every part of your human anatomy. Yes.
Musa, when you know, when you're talking to parents, I wonder if aggregate numbers like you've mentioned work, because it's partly an emotional response, isn't it, in terms of making decisions for your children. You don't want your child to be that one in a million case. So how do you manage this situation, especially if, say, in a clinical situation with their two parents, right, the mother and the father, and they don't agree? Then how do you negotiate these differences within that setting that you have?
Well, in my clinic, it is very emotional, because I will tell my patients that I've got three grandchildren, 5, 6, 7. I'm looking forward to the vaccine for them, because I know the vaccine efficacy is 91%, i.e. 9 out of 10 of my grandkids will not get COVID with all the complications, MISC, long COVID, right? And even the 10% that breakthrough infection gets it, it is category 1, category 2. Now, your risk of not taking the vaccine for myocarditis is 450 per million. How does that compare to 1 per million? Oh, I mean, this is fairly basic risk-benefit analysis. And the risk of you getting MISC, multisystemic inflammatory syndrome, which affects every part of your child's anatomy, that is 1 in 1,000 if you get COVID. But with the vaccine, you actually prevent your child from getting COVID. Hey, by the way, in 2020, 13,000 kids got COVID. In last year, 500,000 of our children got COVID. Can you imagine? 1 in 10 of them will get long COVID. You want your 5-year-old child to be living with long COVID for the next 70 to 80 years? So, of course, I'll be speaking to them in a much lighter tone than I would be with you, right? And, I mean, long COVID, I mean, imagine. They were learning disorders, right? In adults, it's dementia. Imagine breathing difficulties, kidney problems, fatigue, malaise, bone pains for the next 70 to 80 years. That's a lifetime of suffering, which we can prevent with the vaccine.
Very quickly, Dr. Musa, I'm just wondering, any word on about vaccinating the under fives? So at the moment, 5 to 11-year-olds, are we thinking also that maybe under infant to 5-year-olds may need the vaccination at some point?
Yeah, both the mRNA technologies, i.e. Moderna and Pfizer, have tested their vaccines. Yeah. By the way, the ones for 5 to 11 is 10 micrograms, which is 1/3 the adolescent and adult dose, 0.2 mils instead of 0.3 mils, and they are 8 weeks apart. But for the 6 weeks to 5 years, Pfizer's vaccine has not been effective. So it's back to research. Moderna have yet to release their studies. So there is research ongoing at this point in time, yeah.
Okay, thank you so much for joining us on the show tonight and sharing your insights. Consultant pediatrician Dr. Musa Noordin there. We're going to take a quick break on Consider This. We'll be right back with more on this topic. Don't go anywhere. Thank you so much for staying with Sharad and I on Consider This. However, if you've just joined us on the show tonight, we're addressing some of the concerns that parents may have getting the COVID-19 vaccine for their 5 to 11-year-old children. Professor Dr. Sharifah Izzat Wanpute joins us now. She's a health economy and public health specialist at University Kebangsaan Malaysia. Dr. Izzat, you know, there seems to be increasing evidence that Omicron symptoms are less severe. Therefore, it's leading to, less concern that children may need the virus, children of the age bracket of 5 to 11 years old. How would you respond to that?
Well, if we're talking about Omicron per se, it has actually reached a lot of countries overseas, but Malaysia probably has not seen its worst scenario yet. That means that we know that Omicron has come into Malaysia, but it's not that bad in a way, not like in other countries like UK or US or Japan. Having said that, we don't have to wait for Omicron to come. We already have the Delta, the Alpha and things like that. So we know that Omicron is going to come, and if it hits Malaysia's shore, we know that the virus is highly transmittable, even though some would say it is less severe. This is something that we need to prevent, especially for those among those who are not vaccinated and those who are not boosted yet. So if we're talking about the children, 5 to 11, they have totally not been vaccinated, and some people may argue that some of them may have natural immunity, or basically they have been infected and they have developed antibodies or basically a response towards that infection. But that number is actually very small, and you don't have to wait to get infected to for natural immunity to kick in, because the risk of you getting infected with COVID and having a lot of complications from COVID is actually is very possible. So for me, as a public health practitioner, prevention is always better than cure. And the prevention right now that we can see, besides the SOP and also controlling your mixing around and things like that, are through vaccination. So this is why one of the reasons that in a lot of countries, we advocate for children to be vaccinated.
Dr. Izzat, how much autonomy do you think parents should have in making decisions for their children in terms of vaccination, because of the nature of the pandemic, what would have otherwise been a private decision has become a deeply public or collective one. Where's the balance that needs to be struck between the rights of parents and their children versus the public good?
Right. Well, getting vaccinated for the community and basically for the population, this is something that we need to work on collectively in achieving so-called the herd immunity. Now, I know that some scientists do not actually believe in this herd immunity, because one of the reasons is that we keep seeing a lot of variants coming up. We have seen the Delta, and now we have seen the Omicron, and there's even some variants of the Omicron coming up. But we need to understand, parents need to understand basically why the vaccination is very much needed. So when you talk about autonomy, I think for immunizations across the world, including in Malaysia, parents are very much involved. They have a lot of autonomy on their children specifically, on getting vaccinated and so forth. But for the greater good and also for the public good, it is actually very highly recommended that the parents do understand and actually go along for vaccinations. You may not be well-versed in this, so please get information from the correct persons. Talk to your doctors and talk to your pediatricians on the risks and also the benefits of getting COVID vaccinations, specifically now. And we need to understand, there could be some side effects. Yes, it's possible. We cannot run away from that. You need to understand the risk, but also you need to understand the benefit of getting vaccination. There's always the risk of, when we talk about risk and benefit, there's always a so-called risk involved, but there's also benefits involved. And for me, from my perspective, and I hope that the parents do understand this, the benefit actually outweighs the risk. So even though that you may experience some adverse events or side effects, so-called side effects from the jab, from the vaccines, the benefit is still higher. So you basically have more benefit rather than the cost and also of the risk.
Right. Well, having said that, Dr. Izzat, how do we think about consent when it comes to getting children vaccinated? Say one parent is more leans towards vaccinating a child, whereas the other parent does not. From a public health perspective, do you require both parents' consent? Well, how does that work?
Well, for me personally, of course, both parents need to talk about this among themselves first. You cannot come to the so-called vaccine center and both of you quarreling in front of there, and you know, in the end, one of you will blame the other. So this is a collective effort from the family itself. Your decision is actually for your child. So for us personally, I think that one of the parents should give consent, and that is considered enough. Unless they are divorced or there's some issues, family issues or things like that, this is one of the parents' consent and signature. Basically, this is enough to provide a consent for to be vaccinated.
And how should we be thinking about the vaccination status? You know, some unvaccinated individuals are not allowed entry or are limited in their prohibited in certain interactions. How should we think about unvaccinated children? Should there be restrictions on what they can and cannot do?
Right. For unvaccinated children, for me personally, I think that in many countries, there's what they call as the green pass, or basically, you know, there's going to be restriction of children who are not vaccinated in many areas where it is a public area or schools or canteens or some events that actually expose them to the virus. And in Malaysia itself, I think this might not be the case so much because most of the people in Malaysia is considered mostly adults, and adolescents are being vaccinated. Our high rate of vaccination basically protects the population. We know there's going to be breakthrough cases, but we hope that because of the virus, it's going to be so-called endemic. And, you know, at one point in our stage, the population is going to develop a resistance and also tolerance against this virus. So with that, I don't think that we should actually impose a very strict restriction among children at the moment. Having said that, I still believe that we need to impose the SOP at this point in time, but not to the extent of segregating and the children and so on.
Yeah, Dr. Izzat, you point to a major problem that might arise if we do in fact segregate children, or in fact acknowledge that, you know, some children are unvaccinated might lead to stigma. And I'm wondering about, from a public health perspective, what would you advise? Are there issues around privacy so that there isn't stigmatization of children whose parents have chosen not to have them vaccinated? I mean, how do we deal with that?
Right. This is basically the issue of vaccine hesitancy. And the issue of vaccine hesitancy has actually cropped up in many, many other situations of children getting vaccinated, but also adults getting vaccinated. So this is one of the so-called global health threat appointed by WHO, where people don't come or people don't see the benefits of vaccination. In Malaysia itself, I think this is very important for parents to understand what's the role of the vaccines. And if you go to school, basically, we need to know which children are not vaccinated yet, because in a way they are vulnerable to be infected with the virus. The issue is that if they are infected, not only are the negative effects to the child, but also to the family members, because the child may end up in the hospital. They may develop complications from heart problems. They may develop MISC, and they may have long COVID and things like that. And basically, the family is ruined. So in this sort of scenario, for me personally, I think if you segregate the child, this will lead to correctly stigma. But also in the end, the family will have a lot of a bad perception towards the government and also towards the other situation, the environment itself. So for me personally, I think it's to identify who are the children who do not want to be vaccinated, basically from their parents' perspective, but also to contact with them and basically talk to them and negotiate with them. These are the ways that the child is having. You know, there's going to be ways trying to communicate to these parents on how to basically improve your vaccination status and how to get vaccinated. Is the progress, but also is the process for the patient, for the parents, and also for the child. I think this is very important because we have to communicate professionally, but also influence them in a very positive manner. We cannot just say that, okay, you're the bad guy and you should be off. We cannot come to school and things. This is going to ruin the child and also the child's future.
All right. Thank you so much, Dr. Izzat, for joining us on the show tonight. Appreciate your time. That was public health specialist Dr. Sharifah Izzat Wanpute from UKM. And that wraps up this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutan, signing off for the evening.
Thank you so much for watching. Good night.
Good night.